Big Fat Five. What is up? Welcome back to Big Fat Five, a podcast financially supported by Big Fat Snare Drum. My name is Ben Hilsinger, and this week's guest is Nick Adams, a Los Angeles-based touring and recording drummer whose passion for music and live performance has led him to work with an array of well-known artists such as Rivers Cuomo, Noah Cyrus, Fifth Harmony, Ali and AJ, Liz Phair, and Take That, among others. I am obsessed with his Instagram, and he gets such amazing sounds. He's a nerd when it comes to engineering himself out of his own studio, and it shows. And so if you want to watch a drummer who plays deceivingly hard parts with absolute conviction, please go check him out. It's all linked in the show notes. He's also just a great guy, and I'm stoked to introduce a bunch of you to Nick. So please enjoy the five records that helped shape Nick Adams into the drummer he is today. Cheers. For this list, what was your criteria to see if an album would maybe make the top five and then ultimately make the top five?
This was kind of tough, actually, because like when I was like thinking about this list and kind of considering the stuff that was the most important to me, if I go like far enough back, I grew up mostly like around girls. So like when I was really young, I was listening to like Hanson and like the Spice Girls, and like I was like the target demo for that stuff, right? So, you know, everything that I've ever listened to, I think, is has influenced where I am now. Moving on like from that to then when I actually got into music and started playing drums, and like I started playing drums pretty late. It was like 15 or something. So I wanted to start at the record that like first made me want to play drums, or the record that I can kind of point to be like, that's the most important record in my journey to this point now, which is the C. Miller record. It was interesting because my parents pretty much, they had like five records that they would play in my house. And it was like anthology, like greatest hits style, stuff like that. So it was like the Beatles, it was like Led Zeppelin, Heart. Yeah, I think as far as like the criteria, coming back to your question, I wanted to start at the point where I kind of like was like, yeah, that's what made me interested in music. And the first thing that kind of made me kind of, you know, feel that's what I want to do. Like, I want to like pursue this somehow. And, you know, I think from that point on, those were the records that I considered from then on to be like the most important and most kind of influential in my journey as a musician.
I love it. And so yeah. you did tease number one, so we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
this is kind of an interesting question because I really don't even know if I have an answer for this, but what non-drummer has had the biggest impact on you as a drummer?
That's a great question. I mean, it would have to be like a vocalist, because I think like right now, if I could take my drumming ability and like whatever ability that I have to in the world of drums and like trade that for the ability to have like an amazing voice and sing, like be like a virtuoso singer person, I think I would do that. Because like I think actually voice was like the first thing that made me interested in music. And what's interesting is like going back to what I said before, when I was younger, I remember like the first thing that I ever told my parents about like wanting to get into music was that I wanted to be able to sing like Mariah Carey. Cause I like One Sweet Day.
Yeah.
I loved that song so much. And I loved like Boys to Men. And like, those were the artists that I was like obsessed with when I was like really, really young.
So the next question, before we get into your Big Fat Five, this is kind of a two-parter. So I'm going to add the second part, but in what ways do you actively seek out new inspiration? Because I know you and me both, half the time we're in the studio, we're learning songs we have to record, or we're learning songs for the tour that we're about to do. But how do you seek out inspiration to keep it fresh? And then also with everything on Instagram, I'm sure you and me are inundated with just like drummer videos every second. What impresses you these days?
I think as far as inspiration goes, I think like I kind of take inspiration from a lot of stuff that I at one point wouldn't have made sense to me, like, you know, colors or like textures or whatever. Like, I think like now it's fun to take just things that I see and that I mean, I kind of look for these things in my life now, you know what I mean? And I kind of like am always attempting at least to be open to things that can, that I can sonically replicate in my own way, or like that I can use as like a foundation to like then, you know, create something around. I actually listen to like a lot of like movie score type stuff, because that stuff is so, I also have a licensing project on the side, and like, you know, you're always with that type of music trying to capture some kind of feeling or translate some sort of energy or mood or something like that. And I think that once I started doing that, that kind of opened me up to being like, well, you know, what if I like try to replicate like the texture of sand under a microphone, like on the drums, you know what I mean? I try to now think more abstractly like that. And that's inspired some like really rad stuff that I think that I would never have ordinarily come across or thought of, or even maybe like allowed myself to explore. But yeah, I think like that and just trying to stay up on like what's current as far as like musically, you know, the landscape that we're both in. We both play pop music a lot, so I try to listen to that. And I'm also super interested in like pop production. I spend more of my time watching YouTube videos about how to like shape a snare drum sound or make like an 808 cut through a mix or something like that than I do playing the drums. You know what I mean? Like that's, I'm super nerdy about that stuff. So I definitely catch a lot of inspiration from that too. And a lot of like modern pop production stuff. Yeah. I think that at least at this point in my journey, those are the kind of like biggest areas that I take from.
My secret to a perfect snare sound is to buy a TD-27 KV-2 and then purchase Superior Drummer 3 and just fake it. That's my secret. But anyways, let's just hop into your first Big Fat Five choice. And so you did reference it a little earlier. So it's the Steve Miller Band's Greatest Hits from 1974 to 1978. And the artist is, of course, Steve Miller Band. And you put two key tracks, Take the Money and Run and then Swing Town, both awesome songs. And then I am not familiar with the drummer and how to pronounce his name, Gary Malibur.
Gary Malibur, dude. Okay. This is, and I don't know if the word is like under-celebrated or like what it is, but whenever I talk about Gary Malibur, people don't know who he is. And it blows my mind, because Gary Malibur is, I think, one of the most musical drummers of all time. Like, I just think his touch, his like creativity, his whole energy behind the kit and what he brings to the songs that he's played on is crazy. And I'm biased because that was like the first record that made me want to play drums. But Gary is just such a phenomenal player, and he still plays. Like, he plays around town, and just his playing on all of that Steve Miller stuff, to me, his parts and his playing are like, he's as much of a piece of the band as anybody else who's playing on those records. You know what I mean? That's the type of playing that I love, man. I love part driven, you know, coming back to like the pop sensibility thing that we were talking about. It's like playing the perfect part for whatever section of music or whatever song you're playing on. Like, everything that he plays is so deliberate and so musically and sonically perfect for that music. Nothing else could ever be as good on those songs as what he played. They're just so, so good. And I think that, like, if you don't think that they're good, you just have like never heard them or like listened to them like enough or something, because I'm like, these songs are just sonically perfect. Like, you know,
you're either a fan or not familiar. That's what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what it is. You know?
Well, do you want to listen to Take the Money and Run or Swing Town?
Let's do Take the Money and Run first.
All right, here we go.
Billy Joe and Bobby Sue, two young lovers with nothing better to do than sit around the house, get high and watch them too. And here's what happened when they decided to cut loose. They headed down to Old El Paso. I swear they ran into a great big house.
Can we listen to that first four bars again?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, come on. Like the note spacing in those fills, like his lope, it's like got a bit of swing to it. It's like straight, but it's like a little bit swung. Like he's got that, you know what I mean? And like that swoosh, I heard him tell a story about like the China thing that he's playing on that first crash. It's funny when you hear these stories because you're like, they were just dudes in a studio and then like somebody brought out, like it was like a cracked thing that somebody had and that they were like, yeah, you got to play this on that part. But it's like, I can't imagine anything that's more perfect for that thing, like where it sits in the mix and the texture and everything. Dude, it's just flawless. And like, I have spent so much time trying to like decipher and like figure out how he's like playing those little like upbeat 16th hi-hat, the pss, pss, those things, and make like without interrupting the groove or the feel of like what he's playing, because it's not easy to do that with your, when you're playing your right hand hi-hat thing, like to hit those upbeats and just make it sound and then come right back with the little 30-second ghost notes after that second one into that next bar. I like have a theory about how he's doing it, but like obviously I've just spent so much time like dissecting this and trying to like wrap my head around like what he did. But I just think that's the best feeling thing that I've ever heard. I still listen to that. When I was like 9, 10 years old, way before I started playing drums or like got interested in music or anything, I would just loop that four bars in my bedroom. I just think it's sonically perfect. It's just the grooviest thing that I hate the word groove, but like that's like the grooviest thing that I've ever heard in my life, you know?
Well, let's listen to Swingtown. Good.
That fill, dude, he plays two of those fills and I think it's like a six stroke roll thing guy going on with some accents and stuff, but I'm like, dude, that fill has so much movement, like it makes you so excited for that chorus. It's the perfect thing to take you into that chorus, you know what I mean? And every song is like that. Like, can you imagine that song with any other part? It always like takes me back to just like parts. Like I just love parts that are deliberate and like supports a piece of music that when you hear it, you're like, I can't imagine anything else that could even go there. I love that. And when I hear somebody do that, I'm like, what are they doing? Like, how do I do that better? You know what I mean?
Yeah. If there was ever like a court case about, you know, we need to give drummers more than just the arrangement points, bring this album in there and be like, see, this is the song.
Dude, totally. I feel like, you know, in these songs, the drums are like as much a melodic element as like the guitars or the vocals are. Like, I really feel like they contribute that heavily to these songs, you know?
Well, this is a great segue into the next choice, which this drummer, I think, is very much a part of the band. The album's Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. Artist is Blink 182, release year's 2001. And I love this track, probably my favorite track on the record. So I'm happy you chose this, is Story of a Lonely Guy and Mr. Travis Barker. So yeah, take it away and then we'll listen.
Dude, like Travis Barker, you're right. One of the most like musical drummers of all time, right? Like his parts are like unexpected, but at the same time, just so perfect for what he's doing. You know, it fits so well. And it's like, I think with this song, specifically, the whole song is just so rad, but the intro part, the little hi-hat thing that he does, like that little thing, that was just so fascinating to me when I started playing drums. And I think partly because I couldn't do it, so I think I was just fascinated by that. That was, again, like one of those songs that I would listen to the intro over and over and over. I didn't even know what he was doing. And that record, interestingly enough, is like both of those records, Enema of the State and Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, I was like the target demo for pop punk. And those records were the some of the first records that I ever played, like in my bedroom when I got my drums and started wanting to shed and figure out and take off your pants and jacket. I used to like play a game with myself because I knew the record so well. And like, I used to play it so much. I knew everything note for note, like front to back. So I would like walk into a class that I had to, you know, take in high school and like decidedly not do anything and not pay attention in that class and be like, I'm not going to listen to anything that happens in that class. Like that record was about the length of like one of my classes, like 53 minutes was like the length of the record. And like the class was like an hour. So I would be like, I'm just going to play that record in my head front to back and see how close I can get to like the actual length of the record. Like I would like play that game with myself.
We're such dorks, dude. I totally relate to that, but we are fucking geeks.
Like what a fucking nerdy ass thing to do, right? You're like, I'm just going to play this album in my brain for like.
But every drummer, I think, could relate to that. So
totally, dude. Totally.
Well, here is a story of a lonely guy. Reference Enema of the State, and I agree that record sounds good too, but Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, sonically the drums are so clear.
I mean, the snare sounds like so like, yeah, clean and punchy, and like it's got some body, but it's cuts through everything. And like whoever engineered and mixed those records understood like what Blink was, I think, and perfectly sonically captured, you know, these three guys, which in that kind of trio thing has got to be so fun to mix because there's space for everything. Mark's bass tone, you know, in those songs, it's like it would not be the same without that bass tone. So whoever engineered and mixed those records, like they absolutely crushed it. And I think it's a huge part of like their sonic sort of like vibe is a huge part of their overall sound. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I saw them in at Coachella last year. I was lucky enough to play Coachella. And so I was there on Sunday. And for being almost 50, if not exactly 50, they are... whatever they're taking behind the scenes, they're still showing up. They sound great.
No, dude, and like I have a quick story about just Blink in general and seeing Blink live. So my oldest friend in the world, when we were kids, we would get like babysat together. Our parents would play softball together. His cousin is Tom DeLonge, and Tom DeLonge's mom Connie would be the one who would like babysit us oftentimes, and she would actually bring like old demos of Blink stuff, like some of the first demos that they ever did, over and play them for us. And she was like, my son's in a band, and like, check it out. And
sure,
their old demos are so like, I don't know how else to say it. They're so bad. They're so good, but they're so bad. And like some of those old albums, like it's like a thrashy punk band that's so cool and got so much vibe, but it's like, it doesn't sound great a lot of the time. You know what I mean? So we were always kind of like, I don't know, man, what, you know, that's cool. What is this? You know, what is this though? Like, what are we listening to?
Yeah.
So like later on, when I was like 12, 13 years old, Blink had gotten huge, and they, you know, came and played in San Diego a couple times, and I got to go and like hang out backstage and like, you know, be in like the family room area. And like, it was my first time like really like being at a big concert or anything like that. And Travis Barker has, you know, I think at the time he was like warming up on a little kick snare hat type thing. So I was like 12 years old, and we weren't supposed to leave the family room area, but I was like, I heard him warming up in his like room that was like next door or whatever. And I was like, I gotta just like see what's going on. So I, you know, I like walked out and like kind of turned the corner and peeked in. And he was just doing stuff that I was just like, and I didn't play drums at this time. Like I hadn't thought about playing drums. I was just interested in music. And I was, you know, I'd kind of like been inspired by past stuff that I'd listened to. And I was really into records and listening to to the music that I liked, but I wasn't, it hadn't crossed my mind to play music yet. But I think like seeing him in that moment doing what he was doing, I think that like flipped a switch where I was like, I think I got to do that. You know,
I wonder if you would go back and like replay the tape and he's just like doing like a paradiddle at like 60 BPM.
Probably was.
Right, left, right. And you're like, holy shit, I need to be a drummer.
Just fascinated. Yeah.
Yeah. Just mom, have to go now. honestly, it would still impress me if I saw him doing that. So
100%. Yeah. He would just do it with like, he would do it, you know, with style, and he would own it, and it would be incredible. I'm sure.
All right. Well, hey y'all, I wanted to talk to you about a drum I've recently received from Preston at Vessel Drum Co. It's an Ocean Patinaed 14x5.5 snare drum, and it's incredible. It's got a 1.5mm shell, brass shell, with 10 lugs, chrome over brass triple flange hoops, a Trick 3-position strainer, 42-strand wires. It's lovely, it's loud, and it cuts and records as beautiful as a piece of butter cake. And Preston, actually, this is why it's called the Ocean Patina, is he covers the shell with seaweed and then drops it in the ocean for a certain period of time. And then it patinas with all these crazy cool designs. And if you all remember, Preston was actually one of the first guests on the podcast. When I first started out, I didn't really know what the Big Fat Five format was going to be, or if it was going to be even Big Fat Five at all. But I went to his garage, his you know, where he makes all of his drums. It was really cool. He walked me through. The episode is essentially from start to finish what happens with a drum. And it was a really fun episode. It's now archived at bigfatsnaredrum.com just because it doesn't fit the format of Big Fat Five. I want you to get back to the show, but go check it out. This drum is beautiful. And he actually let me use it on an Eve 6 tour, and I didn't keep it, and I regretted it ever since then, just because I was trying to pinch pennies at the time, and I just kept thinking about it. And so the opportunity to get it again was presented, and it is one of my favorite drums. So the Ocean Patinaed 14x5.5 snare drum, check it out. Reach out to me, go to Vessel Drum Co. The Instagram's just at Vessel Drum Co. And check it out. It's amazing. It's beautiful. Sounds great. Bye. Forks Drum Closet, Nashville's full-line drum store. Celebrating its 40th year in business, Forks is independently owned and operated in the heart of Music City. Specializing in drums and percussion, Forks offers great discounts on all major brands and will beat any retailer's advertised price. From new and used equipment, vintage drums, and marching and orchestral instruments, Forks has something for every drummer. They offer professional rental, repair, and restoration services, as well as drum lessons. Stop by their storefront at 308 Chestnut Street, Nashville, Tennessee, zip code 37210. Or go online at ForksDrumCloset.com. All the information I just said is at ForksDrumCloset.com. Let's go to number three. I mean, I could talk about Travis all day. And I probably, listeners, I'm sure there'll be a Travis-focused episode eventually. But how do you pronounce the name of this next record? It's the Tool record.
Was it Lateralus? That's the one of that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was born between that and Onima. So lateral. Yeah, right. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry. Right.
No. Lateralus. Close enough. The artist is Tool. The release year is 2001. And you have two key tracks. It's The Grudge and then Ticks and Leeches. Yeah. Take it away. Oh, sorry. The artist or the drummer is Danny Carey. So take it away and then we'll go from there. Yeah.
Dude, Danny Carey, he's just another one of those like players that I think what he does is just a combination of like unexpected and yet so musically perfect for that. Tool is like progressive music, right? So it's not for everybody. Like not everybody listens to that type of music and not everybody's like obsessed with it or whatever. I think like he's equally as musical as, you know, somebody like Travis Barker or somebody like Gary Malibur, in my opinion. And it's just in a different context, right? It's just in like in a different setting and in a different sort of sonic landscape. But I think that Danny Carey is the example of somebody who has always approached his parts and his playing from a purely creative standpoint. Like it doesn't sound like he's playing drums. It sounds like he's playing the song. And you know, he's got like all these sort of specific tonal stuff. His drums are like always tuned to the key of the song, and he's got like tablas, and he's got like all this Middle Eastern percussion stuff that he experiments with. And you can tell that he's just like an experimenter. And like, you know, he's another one of those examples that I think there just couldn't be anybody else in that band. And it would be a whole different band and a whole different sonic landscape if he wasn't a part of it. I can't imagine someone other than Danny Carey being a Tool. If he needed a sub, I don't know what they would do. I actually just saw them. My girlfriend got me tickets to see them on Valentine's Day. It was like her, she surprised me. And that's another one of those bands like Blink, where like, I think Danny's like 62 or something, you know, now those guys are like, those guys are in their 60s. And he fucking just crushed the show so hard, man. His playing is so deliberate and purposeful, and his parts are like so just thought out and intelligent that I've just always been inspired by him. And I think that those records, like what other band has had successful radio hits that are like 12 minutes long? Like they actually have commercially successful music, and they're like a progressive rock metal band. You know what I mean? Like they're just, they've always been like such outliers in as far as like that it is concerned. And like that combination, I think there's like some insane genius behind being able to write something that is available to the masses in that way, and that millions of people can listen to and want to listen to over and over and over, and that's catchy enough to like, you know, fit into that sort of public scape, and then also do the stuff that they do, because it's insane some of the stuff that they do musically. A lot of it is odd time stuff, you know what I mean? Like I think that balance is like a crazy balance to have achieved. Let's do The Grudge. Can we do the end of The Grudge, actually?
Sure, yeah.
There's like a breakdown section at the end, and then that outro thing comes in, and it's like kind of, he's like sort of soloing over that outro thing.
Can you imagine being the engineer? Yeah, that was good. Want to do it one more time? What?
No, man. I think we got it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we got it.
Yeah.
I would not want to be the guy who has to mic up that kit.
I know.
Like the first day with a new engineer, they're just like, fuck, let's do this. Yeah, honey, I'm not going to make dinner. I'll just tell you right now.
Imagine he was like 18, like bringing his shit around to like their first record. You know what I mean? Like he had it.
Dude, I've always wondered that, like metal drummers, like, I think the first time I thought about this was seeing Slipknot. Do bands like that, do they just start playing bigger venues? Because imagine you playing the Troubadour or something with that kit. It's like, there's no room.
It's like Terry Bozzio playing the Baked Potato with like the entire Death Star. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like,
whatever.
What do you do? Well, anyways, well, let's move on to number four. So I'd never heard of this record, so I was stoked when you brought it up. So the album Sawdust, the artist is The Killers, release year is 2007. The key track is Sam's Town, probably not the Sam's Town people are used to hearing. And then the drummer is Ronnie Vannucci Jr.
Yeah.
I'll say this, The Killers are probably the best live band I've ever seen in my life.
No, 100%. I actually saw like an infamously, like somebody just like made me aware of this on a gig, but I saw like an infamously bad Killers show in Santa Barbara at the Santa Barbara Bowl one time that goes down if you know, people who are like really into The Killers. It was, without like going too far into it, it was like a show where like Brandon Flowers got like really kind of pissed because the crowd was like so mellow and like crickets the whole show. And it was really a strange vibe in the audience. Like it was just a weird, you know, where like the energy's just off or whatever, but he was like, you know, you can stand up. This is not the fucking zoo. Like it was getting uncomfortable, but they were still, obviously they still crushed it, and they're still The Killers, and they still played amazingly well. But this record, Sam's Town, the reason that I included this in my thing was that Sam's Town when I started listening to that record is when I started kind of like building my studio space, accumulating the first gear that I used to record. And I think like, it almost sounds like an album of B-sides. It's like very organic and very not like produced like a typical Killers record. In that version of Sam's Town is like, you know, Live at Abbey Road. It's like first half of it is just Brandon Flowers and like a piano. And then Ronnie comes in with this really cool, just like he plays brushes the whole time. And I think like for me, it made me realize how much the Killers sort of sonically mattered, like what they did. And like, I think just texturally what Ronnie does on the drums and his approach to his tones and his snare sounds and his kick drum sounds and his drums just sound like they're covered in like this like amazing like layer of sand or something, but it's just so like crunchy and there's just this saturated thing to it that's like that's just so attractive and so perfect for their music. And I think that when I started building my studio space, like I was like, I gotta get sounds like that that are just that smooth and yet deep and fat. And that whole record is like that. It's super raw and it's like really kind of, you know, not overproduced, but sonically it's a, I think it's a beautiful record.
All right. So yeah, this is Sam's Town live at Abbey Road. Go at about 109.
Well, have you ever seen the light? Have you ever seen the light? I took a shuttle on a shockwave ride where people on the pen pulled the trigger for accolades. I took a bullet and I looked inside it, running through my veins in American masquerade. I still remember Grandma Dixie's way. I'd never really known anybody to die before. Red, white, and blue upon a birthday cake. My brother, he was born on the 4th of July. Is the answer to the question on your mind? And I'm sick of all my judges. They're so scared to let me shine. But I know that I can make it as long as somebody takes me home.
Very cool.
Isn't it cool, man? Texturally, what he's doing is like dancing kind of in the background. I think that one thing that Ronnie does so well is incorporates a splash like foot hi-hat thing in so much of what he does. And it's just kind of like floating next to everything in such a cool way. Like it just sort of like creates this lopey, dancey thing. And like the way that his cymbal choices and the way that they blend with like the strings and the synths, that's just so beautiful to me. I think it's just sonically like lush. You know, it feels like he's playing like a, he's part of the orchestra.
Yeah. You know?
Everything that he does, is, it sounds like that to me. It sounds like he's taking into consideration all of that stuff and then picking like the perfect place for his drums to sit and mix and like how it's going to texturally blend with everything.
Yeah, he has like a very theatrical, almost like vaudevillian approach to drums. It's very timeless, but also very time focused. He's so busy, but he never gets in the way. It's kind of like Danny Carey, but it's, and I got to go back to when I saw them live. It was so funny because the first song they played was Mr. Brightside. And we were like, really? That was like, you start. And then we're like, oh, well, we don't know that many songs after that. We knew every song. And it's just, what an incredible band. All right, so number five, albums Hotel California. Artist is The Eagles, released here's 1976. Key track that you want to talk about is Life in the Fast Lane and Mr. Don Henley. So yeah, take it away, then we'll listen to some Eagles.
I love singer-songwriter drummers. Like, they're just my favorite drummers. But this song is just like one of those songs where it immediately just like grabs you with something that kind of stops you. In, you know, you have to listen to it and like see where it's going. And it's just like those like stops, and the way where he places the backbeat in that first part of the intro, mm-hmm. and where he drops it out is like just so fucking cool to me, man. Yeah, dude, I love this song. And the Eagles were actually, I put it last because it was later in my life that I, you know, it's only in the last like probably 6 or 7 years that I've really gotten deep into the Eagles. For some reason, I got obsessed with them. I think I'd learned some of their stuff for like a gig or something. And then I just like dove really deep into their whole catalog. And I was like, how have I not listened to this before? Like, how is this like evaded me? And man, I just was obsessed with it. Went and saw them a couple times and went to the Dodger Stadium show with Steely Dan. And yeah, I love this too, man. Insane. And he used to play drums for like their most of their sets back in the 70s, and he would just sing and play like all that shit. I'm like, God, man, it's insane. His feel and his touch still are just like so fucking cool. That snare sound, I still listen to them all the time.
But yeah, and all of his solo stuff's great too. He has some very fun album covers of him just looking cool in the 80s and early 90s.
He definitely does. He's got a couple of Blue Steel moments. And,
yes, he does. Yeah. He has like one with like, I think he has one strand of hair going down.
Exactly.
Oh God. Donnie boy. Good for you, man.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Own it. You know?
Well, that's your top five, man. So I'll let you go for the sake of just the time constraints of the podcast. I think that's awesome. For people that want to find out more, see you live, perhaps, all your stuff is going to be tagged in the show notes. But if you would like to do a little self promotion, then I'll let you get back to your what, Monday it is?
Monday, yes, it is indeed Monday. I post pretty regularly on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube stuff occasionally and stuff like that. But yeah, that's where you can find me, and I stay up pretty consistently on all that stuff. But yeah, dude, thank you for having me.
Dude, so fun, man. All right, today's big fat favorite is from Aaron Gilbert Steele. He's played with so many artists, including Portugal the Man, Hayley Williams of Paramore, Daniel Caesar, Sam Dew, a bunch of others. He's based out of Nashville, and he's always working, so go follow him on Instagram. But one of his choices was the album Miracles. The release year is 1981. The artist is Change, and the song choice is Hold Tight. The drummer is Terry Silverlight. So this is what Aaron had to say. What is there to say about this tune? It's late disco era greatness. I was utterly obsessed with emulating this feel and pocket by Terry Silverlight on the drums for a good year or two. He was about 17, I think, maybe I'm wrong, when he recorded this to tape in an era with no editing. It's perfect. All right, here is Hold Tight and the drummer's Terry Silverlight. I rhymed.
Feel it stay, hold tight. anyone can say that can change the way you feel. 'Cause you know that love is real. You can choose with whom you fall in love. Anybody, any moment, anywhere. 'Cause no matter who you choose, there's a chance that you might lose. Gonna try, and that's the best that I can do.
Hold tight. If you wanna make this feeling stay, hold tight.
And that's the show. If you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, do that. It helps more people find the show, so it'll get bigger and better, and hopefully I'll have a chance to sell out one day. But you'll be an OG listener that can brag to all your friends. Anyways, why don't you go and check us out at BigFatSnareDrum.com and follow us on all the socials. Just search for Big Fat Snare Drum and you will find us. The show is edited in part using Isotope RX Audio Editor. It's amazing, so go check that out at Isotope.com. And thanks again to Gunnar Olsen for the theme music. Bye.